Hello and welcome to Rewatchable, episode number 301. Today we'll be talking about Agent Carter, season one, episode three, Time and Tide. My name is Danielle and I will be your host for this episode, and I'm super excited to get started. But before we do, I want to remind you that you can get in contact with us, and we encourage you to get in contact with us. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at re_watchable, and you can come find us on Tumblr. We're at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. Again, I'm Danielle. I will be steering the ship today, but along with me, I have a fellow superfan, Karen, and two newbies, Ariana and Kristen. Hey, everybody.
Hi.
Hi. Am I a newbie?
Are you? I thought you were.
Are you a half newbie? Season one superfan?
Got it. Okay.
I was going to say, I thought I was a super fan now.
I'm sorry.
I could be a newbie if I need to be a newbie.
Our other super fan, Kristen, is definitely a super fan.
I've never been a super fan before, so it's understandably confusing, but...
It is confusing. That is my bad. I deeply apologize. Would you like to go first with our fun facts? Will that make it slightly better or would that make it worse?
I can do that. Okay. My fun fact for today is that we've reached that point in the year where everyone is really excited about their books that come out later in the year. So I have like arcs for like June and July that are here. And so I just get to like stare at them and love them and not feel the pressure of having to have them read right now. And it makes me really happy because these are like books that I'm really excited about. And so I've been looking at this stack of things and I'm like, I want to read, like, I really want to read. And then I don't. And I'm like, why am I not reading right now? But I really love this time of year because I get to be excited about all of it. And yet the time has not come to be stressed out about them yet. So I just get to smile at the books that are sitting on my nightstand.
You're like in the happy medium place.
Yep. It's really nice. And then I'll get really stressed out in about 2 weeks when I have a lot of stuff to do.
I understand all of this very deeply.
Yay, arcs.
Happy for you. Karen, would you like to go next with your fun fact?
Sure. Next weekend, Kristen and I are going to the Percy Jackson musical, The Lightning Thief, and I'm really excited about it.
That's awesome. Yeah. Where is it?
It's in Detroit. Okay. And I've heard really good things about it. And even Rick Riordan, the author, likes it, which, like, he's notorious for hating the movies and talks about it basically whenever he can. But he's said nothing but good things about the musical. I don't know if he's seen it or if he just... Because
nothing but good things, but he hasn't seen it. Sure.
I don't know. But I think, like, the whole production and, like, the way that it came about and stuff, he probably liked better than the deal he had with Fox and, like, all this other stuff. Because, like, he tried to help with the movies and suggested, like, gave them 12 pages of notes on the first movie that they basically completely ignored. So he just, like, washed his hands of it. Whereas I think the musical were probably a lot more willing to work with him, maybe. I don't know. I don't know the whole deal. I just know people like it. It's a musical about Percy Jackson, and I'm seeing it with Kristen, who is also a huge Percy Jackson fan, so it makes me very happy.
That's awesome. That sounds like it'll be a good time. Please report back with how it is.
Yes.
I have a question. Both of
you, because you might have differing opinions. But
do you know, Are they having the kids? Are they played by kids, or are they played by adults who are pretending to be 12?
That is a good question. Clearly, I have not, like, looked up this thing very much. So I don't know what I'm getting into. I think they're, like, kind of older. I don't think they're, like, 30-something. I think they're younger-ish. But I also am not sure if they're meant to be 12.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder if they still go to camp. This is the one at the camp, right? I've never read these.
Yeah. Okay.
This is
like I find it hard whenever one of Karen, like someone who's friends with Karen is like, I haven't read this. I'm like, really? She made me read them.
The difference being I don't live with Karen.
I love them. I love them. And I'm very grateful she made me read them. But it always cracks me up because I'm like, oh, just you wait.
I know. It's been on my list. It's not like I'm actively against it. I just
also they're middle grade books, so like they're not for everybody.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I feel like they do cross a lot of age ranges. Like I'm a 30-year-old woman who still enjoys reading these books. I'm obsessed with mythology, which is a huge part of it, but also they're just really entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, one of my best friends read them while we were like seniors in college, and she fell in love with them. Mm. So.
And I remember reading The Last Battle, and when I finished it, just thinking that it was just as emotionally satisfying as Harry Potter or The Hunger Games. I was just so impressed with it.
Oh. Okay.
My entire day was just made.
I could hear it. Karen was like, I'm so excited.
I'm clutching my heart right now.
Oh my goodness. Well, let's not make Karen cry again on this podcast. Ariana, what is your fun fact for the week?
My fun fact is that I just finished binge watching Roswell, New Mexico, and it is, as corny as this sounds, such a beautiful show.
Really?
Like, okay, in every way, including visually. Visually, it's stunning. It's filmed in New Mexico, and it feels like it. But just, it's so good, and I feel like it's not going to get credit for how good it is, because it's good in such subtle ways. The writing is incredible. Like, I'm genuinely moved by the things. It's like watching a play sometimes, the language they use. It's so great. And the acting is unbelievable. They have so much chemistry. Like, the main couple has so much chemistry. I'm like clutching my chest the whole time I'm watching it. And then the aliens are supposed to be siblings. They really feel like siblings from the first episode. I was just thinking, it's kind of like This Is Us, I guess, then, in terms of like the quality comes from the writing and the acting. But it's just, it's so good. And it has so much, like when I watch it, I can just tell there's so much passion behind it. Like they're just unabashedly into it. The people who are writing it and the people who are acting in it. And I met Janine Mason, and she's genuinely the kindest person I think I've ever met in my life. So everyone should go watch it and support it.
You know, I wanted to, and then I heard nobody talking about it. But that's really interesting, because all I think of is the, obviously the original one, which I just watched a couple years ago. But if you said that the chemistry between the two main characters is very much there, I am here for it, because it was not there for me in the original one.
I've never seen the original one, but this one is different in that it takes place as adults, which is also kind of really nice, because it's like a CW show in terms of like the fun, like soapiness of it, but everyone is adults, so it's not like watching like I enjoyed Riverdale, but it's not like watching Riverdale in terms of the problems feel a lot more. I don't know. It's nice being an adult watching adults.
Yes, instead of being asked to I don't know.
Like, the biggest problem in the world isn't what am I gonna wear to prom.
Yeah.
It's like, why is everyone in my family dying? You know?
Sure. Sure. Okay. All right. I will have to check out Roswell, New Mexico. Thank you. And my fun fact for the week is actually also TV based. If you follow me on Twitter, you may already know this, but I am completely obsessed with the Umbrella Academy. And I have listened to the music from that basically for 2 weeks straight at this point. I haven't been able to go back and watch it, but I want to, which is new for me in that I don't usually finish something and then rewatch it immediately. But yeah, so I'm obsessed with the Umbrella Academy. Klaus is my favorite character. Please come find me on Twitter so I can yell at you about it. if you've also seen it and enjoy it. I won't yell at you if you haven't enjoyed it.
I'm enjoying it so far. I'm still only on episode 5, I think. And okay. Klaus is also currently my favorite character. So we'll see what happens.
I'm just saying I love Klaus, but I also have a big soft spot in my heart for Luther. And that's all I'm going to say about that.
Okay. I do too, but I have thoughts. But we will take them elsewhere. Because
I know. It's okay.
We will take those elsewhere because my thoughts are currently very much on Peggy, Jarvis, and weirdly, Krasminski. So I really want to get into talking about this episode. Again, we are talking today about Agent Carter Season 1, Episode 3, Time and Tide. And Ariana came up with this awesome recap for us, which goes, in this episode, Peggy and Jarvis finally discover some of Howard Stark's stolen items, but in their efforts to save their friend, they both end up losing their dignity. Meanwhile, we learn a little bit more about Jarvis's previous wartime adventures, and in the aftermath of it, one of the SSR's agents gets killed. So this episode, a lot happens, but not a lot happens, which I find really interesting, especially given how that opening scene goes. I feel like the opening scene is very different from the rest of the episode until there is that turn. Super fans, did anyone forget how this opening scene was going to go?
Yes.
In terms of like being bad, but then also just being for a late night hookup?
Yeah, I totally forgot. And I was like, oh no. Oh, wait.
I always just love her, like, closing the window in his face. Like, it's very Peggy. Because, you know, she's our heroine. So, you know, you kind of expect her to be like, oh, yeah, come on in. But then you remember that this is Peggy. Mm-hmm. So, of course, she closes it in his face. Like, that's very Peggy of her.
Yep. And she's not being mean. Like, no. It's her room. And yep. He's doing something wrong anyway, so.
Exactly.
Ariana, how did this opening go for you? How did it land for you?
I thought he was going to be bad anyway. Like, I didn't get that it was a joke.
Okay.
So I thought he was pretending to be not bad.
I mean, he ends up being sort of bad in that he gets his girlfriend kicked out of the Griffith. I mean, which I guess is both of their decisions.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that makes him bad.
Yeah.
I mean, they were just having some fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess they're a little old to be sneaking into people's rooms, but.
But you gotta do what you gotta do, I guess.
Yeah, why didn't they just go to his place?
Right? That's what I was curious about, actually. I know that the rules of the Griffith are that curfew is at 10, but what happens if you just don't come home?
But clearly they don't enforce them as rigorously because Peggy is out at all hours of the night.
Right. So like, are you just not allowed back in at 10? Or is it if you're not home by 10, like that's bad and you might get kicked out? That's what I want to know. Cause Peggy is out. So she leaves by 10. Is she in trouble?
I mean, and they're still adults. So like if they have to work all night or if they,
but they're women, you know, women don't work all night, Kristen.
Oh, that's true. Dang it. Maybe they took a weekend trip to the country in the middle of the week instead of the weekend.
No, but genuinely, Kristen's right. People would have to, like, even the jobs they have, like Peggy's, they asked her to take the night shift and she said no, but she could have to. And even working at the diner, there's a lot of 24-hour diners. Mm-hmm. She could have to work the night shift.
Fair point. Very fair point.
It's just interesting.
So I want to keep talking about the Griffith. We don't spend a ton of time in there, but we do get to see kind of how the girls all interact over breakfast, including when, I forgot her name, so I apologize, but when the one girl gets kicked out. And Ariana, you put in a note here about being impressed about the number of women just in general who were allowed to speak in this episode. Did that kind of start for you within the Griffith or was it kind of later on?
Impressed is a strong word. I was being facetious.
Yes. Okay. It's early and I didn't read it like that until now. Yes.
Yeah, no,
please.
I mean,
please explain.
I was pleased that there was more women considering like what the record was in the first episode. Mm-hmm. I was pleased, and it made me think like there's hope in terms of Peggy getting to have more female friendships and just female interactions in general, even just having like the villain of the who is she, like this head, I want to say like headmistress, I don't know what she is.
Oh,
but
let's go with headmistress, why not?
Like when it was so, I'm now having finished the episode, I'm not sure it's going to be something that recurs, which makes me a little sad, but at the beginning it made me think, oh, this might be like a weekly episode thing in terms of her having meals and chatting with the girls that live there and just in general is getting to know them better.
I mean, I think part of that is Peggy's hesitation to get close to anyone, especially women. But I do think in this episode, we see the walls that she built up sort of for their protection come down a little bit, especially in terms of her interactions with Angie. Like Angie comes and she just kind of bursts into Peggy's room, kind of not unlike I might do to someone if I've had a day or if I lived close to anyone. In general, but, and then at the end, like we see Peggy, who probably otherwise wouldn't have gone to Angie for anything, go to her for some comfort. I don't know if anybody had any thoughts about how their relationship is going so far.
I think it's so interesting. I like it a lot. And I think it's unfortunate because it's not like Peggy doesn't like her. She's just obviously afraid of getting her killed. And Angie feels much closer to Peggy than I think Peggy is allowing herself to be. And of course she's going to like kind of burst into a room and be like, oh man, the day I had, let's talk about it. And let's, you know, have a drink and stuff. And Peggy's just like, I can't do this. And Angie is obviously very hurt by that because she thought they had a friendship, and they do, like that's a thing, like that friendship, that chemistry between the two of them is very much there, but Peggy's the one that's constantly trying to back away. And Angie isn't stupid, like she knows what's going on, she knows that something is wrong between them, so she kind of backs off, and it's hard to see that because I like the two of them together.
I was very frustrated with her.
I'm
not very frustrated. I mean, I don't really care, to be honest. But sure. Of the two, I was more frustrated with Angie because that to me was just like, Angie, you're a grown woman. like it's nice. I get that they live like kind of in a dorm room setting. And so bursting in is something that they might be used to doing. But like Peggy wasn't rude to her. It was clearly obvious that she had like a rough day at work, and we're like adults. Like sometimes you just have like a rough day, and she just was like, wanted to talk about her. And she should have just been like, hey, are you okay? And if she was, I don't know, just like if she needs to be left alone, like just like leave her alone.
Right.
Ask her. It's okay. It's not, doesn't mean that she doesn't like you. Just means she needs her space. Come back some other time. I don't know. But then she was all like, oh, so huffy. When she wasn't even rude to her.
Yeah. And then they were huffy in front of the newest resident, Daddy Underwood, who was moving into the recently vacated room next to Peggy's because the girl got kicked out. Any thoughts about Daddy Underwood, Ariana? I don't want to ask the super fans. But you have in the doc here that she's so nice that you think Dottie might be evil?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I'm just like saying everyone's evil at this point. Everyone who's nice is evil.
Sure.
Try and spice up my life.
That's cool. Well, what we know about Dottie right now, I mean, she's given a name. she's given like a full name and we're introduced to her. So I think it's kind of safe to assume that we'll be seeing her again. But we know that she is a ballerina, which the headmistress really likes because that takes a lot of like focus and concentration, I guess. And she's from the Midwest, which if the way that she was acting didn't tell you that she was super nice, the fact that she's from the Midwest should also inform a little bit of her character and her niceness. But yeah, any last thoughts about the Griffith or the female relationships? We get to see him a little bit more in this episode, but not a ton. At least not yet.
Can I just say that I cannot imagine having to be like a grown woman and have to live in a place like that. Like in our day and age, it's so like, it's, we all, you know, we make our own decisions. We're adults, we're people, but like to have to be a grown woman in like New York City and have to have a curfew and whatever, just because it's the place you live, like it kills me. Even in like Fantastic Beasts, when you get a taste of this with Tina, like being reminded of the time and that this is a thing that was, you know, very common, just, it gets me every time.
I would last 2 seconds in a place like
right?
that.
Right? I could barely follow dorm rules in college.
Yeah. My rebellious streak would come out and I'd be like, you know what? Nope.
See, I feel like I'd be okay with it. mostly because I'm very much a rule follower. And I mean, they offer free breakfast, or breakfast is included. So I would follow the rules for breakfast, even if it was powdered eggs.
I would probably also be very okay with it. It's like living in a city can feel unsafe at times. And that place feels very safe. And I don't like to like party in my house anyway. I would rather, like, I don't really like people coming over in general because then they get things dirty.
Yep.
So I feel you. I would just be like for all these girls, I'm like, why are you bringing these guys over? Just go to their place.
Yeah. Don't even try to bring them over. Go to their place, find somewhere else. Like, come on. I'm with you. All right. But let's move on from the Griffith. We'll have more to talk about that place later, obviously, because Peggy lives there. But I want to move now from the ladies to, I don't really want to call them all the gentlemen, because they did some not great things in this episode. So basically, Krasinski finds the license plate in the hunk of metal. They run the plates and find out that it was Howard Stark's car. And so Chad Michael Murray, and as Ariana calls him, John Philip Sousa, show up at Jarvis's place, or show up at one of Howard's places, to take Jarvis downtown and question him about it. And that interrogation is not great. So last episode, we see Chad Michael Murray beating up a guy, basically to get information out of him. And this time they're withholding a stolen car report to try to get Jarvis to talk. How are we feeling about what we know about these characters, whether it's Chad McQuarrie who's doing the action or Daniel Sousa who's kind of watching and allowing these things to happen? How do we think about how we know of them as characters and the things that they do or the things that they oversee? Is it just a product of the time, or?
You know what I realized in this scene is that Peggy is the bad guy. Like, she's the actual bad guy in this show. But we just, like, we're following her, so we're like, oh, she's the hero. But she's the one who's doing things wrong. Like, these guys are genuine. Like, they think that Howard Stark is a genuine traitor or whatever. Like, they think he's done something illegal. Mm-hmm. They're investigating and following protocol to try and stop the person who seems like the bad guy. And Peggy is a double agent who mm-hmm. is like thwarting the authorities to help out her friend, who really the only evidence she has that he isn't doing anything wrong is that he's like charming. So, I mean, I'm obviously Peggy's right because she's the hero, but she's the one who's doing a lot of things wrong, and she's being a traitor to her country like Jarvis was. So she better be careful or she's going to end up in Quantic. What is it? They probably don't have that Cuba place.
Like Alcatraz. They name dropped Alcatraz.
Sure. She'll end up there. She needs to be careful.
Yeah, I mean, her decisions have gotten people hurt, or, I mean, not that she directly influenced it, but, like, Ray Krasinski ended up dead at the end of this. But, yeah, she's thwarting her coworkers basically at every step of the way.
I definitely don't disagree with what you said, Ariana, because that's obviously a very good point and very applicable to what happened in this episode. To play devil's advocate, I think there are a couple of other points where it's like, for one, she does know Howard Stark. Like, yes, you know, he's her friend and he could still be hiding stuff, but she tried to tell them, like, I know Howard Stark. He wouldn't do this, and they wouldn't listen to her. I think a lot of the guys are very biased against Howard Stark, and so they are totally following protocol, and all signs point to Howard. But I also think that, like, they wouldn't necessarily try too hard to look elsewhere. Like, they feel very focused on trying to pin this on him. And again, the evidence is kind of there for that, but I don't think a lot of them are trying to think of other ways that this could be happening or that somebody could be framing him or setting him up.
Well, like, the end of the episode, I think, highlights that very much, in that, like, the captain comes out and says, like, no matter what we find, this wouldn't have happened if Howard Stark didn't exist, basically. Right. And whether or not he's done wrong here or has been, you know, wrong has been done to him, they've decided, they've been judge, jury, and executioner and decided that Howard Stark is to blame for Krasinski's death and for whatever else. Like, they've already made that choice. So it's kind of a little both for me. Like, I see Ariana's point, like, Peggy does have a bit of that double agent. Like, she is kind of the bad guy. She's, you know, she's sneaking around and using information she basically doesn't have access to and all of that. Like, she is playing double agent, but at the same time, they've made up their mind that they have their bad guy and they're almost trying to find evidence to support it rather than using the evidence to find the bad guy. Like, they've already decided it's Howard Stark.
To their credit, all of the evidence points to Howard Stark. Mm-hmm. And really the only thing that they have saying it's not Howard Stark is Peggy, like, Peggy's gut. Like, imagine making that. Okay, let's take away the fact that they probably aren't listening to her because she's a woman. If it was, like, just a regular guy in the room and there's 10 guys, they're like, here's all this evidence. And he's like, I don't know, you guys. I know him. And I feel like he wouldn't do this. Like,
that is pretty much every crime drama I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. And then
they prove in real life, that's kind of ridiculous.
I know what you mean.
Do we, so as you guys were talking, I was kind of thinking, do we hold the SSR to any sort of higher standard than normal, like, investigation agencies because they're, like, a secret government organization? Like, in the way that they handle cases like this and think about evidence or even, I guess, treat the people that they bring in for interrogation, do we think about them differently or do they just kind of feel like another, like, they could be just like a normal police station?
I honestly kind of forget they're a secret agent sometimes.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say no, I don't hold them to a higher standard.
Well, I mean, apparently Peggy forgets too, because she has Jarvis call in the fact that they found all of Howard Stark's stuff. And Daniel Souza's like, nobody has this number. Like, who got this number? Which is when I remember, because I forget as well.
I forget every episode that people don't know where she works. That they should think she works at a telephone company. And that Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was just a thought I had. And it's interesting that we all sort of forget. Even though we see, every once in a while, we see Peggy pass through the telephone operator room and talk to Rose and all that kind of stuff. But it almost makes me think that they should be acting differently, especially, I mean, the interrogation just gets me. That's why I keep bringing it up. I know that there weren't as many rules on interrogation at that point. But just the way that they do that kind of stuff, because they are a secret agency, I kind of hold them to a higher standard, and then they kind of bring themselves back down every time they do something like that.
But can't they do that kind of interviewing because they are a secret agency?
I was just going to say that. Like, they
That's can fair. That's a fair point, yeah. I didn't think of it that way. Because, yeah, who would they tell? Or who would believe, I guess, a person who's being interrogated? Who would know? So to get back to the story. So Jarvis is downtown. They dig up information about Jarvis's past that even Peggy doesn't know at this point. And Jarvis kind of goes into that interrogation room pretty, I wouldn't say smug, but something pretty close to it, pretty confident. And then as soon as, I'm just going to keep calling him Chad Michael Murray. As soon as Chad Michael Murray mentions Jarvis's wife, we see him completely switch in how he's relating to the rest of these people. And no matter what, though, Peggy kind of stands by her man, even though the way she does it is, like, gut-wrenching.
Super frustrating.
That's my favorite scene, is her being reamed out by Dooley. But it's so hard to watch, even though you understand why she did it and, like, why it was necessary. I don't know if that scene hit hard for anyone else.
It was frustrating for me. I think it was more frustrating. I know in the pilot, we talked about how she was like, oh yeah, lady problems. Like, can I have some time off? And they're just like, ew, don't tell us that. Yeah, just do what you have to do. And like, I think Ariana, it might've been you or somebody else, was like, it just bothers me that she's leaning into the stereotype in order to do her like double agent thing. This bothered me way more than that, because she looks dumb, and Peggy is not dumb.
Mm-hmm.
She's potentially the smartest person in the room, and the fact that she had to make that sacrifice, I mean, it's only going to make things worse for her in the long run. And I guess part of it is like, okay, she's very loyal to Jarvis and to Howard. She knows that Howard is innocent and is trying to do everything in her power to figure out what the hell is actually going on here. But at the same time, like, she's making a lot of sacrifices for a person that she's not like that close to. And this could ruin her career. And then where is she going to be? And I think that like the stakes feel higher in this episode than they did in the pilot. And I think that's where I start getting really frustrated.
I did like, though, that she was at least like getting chewed out for something that was genuinely so stupid. Like, they think mm-hmm. that she did this. I mean, they obviously don't know she did it on purpose. And so, like, this is just dumb. Like, it ruined their entire case. And yeah, it was so dumb from their perspective.
Do we think, because they have such a, not negative view of Peggy, but they definitely undervalue her a lot, do we think that they saw this as something in line with what she would do, or like, no, even a disappointment for her? Like, do we think it's actually hurting her, how they think of her, or is it just like feeding into how they think?
Oh, definitely. No, that's part of what I liked about it, is that mm-hmm. I feel like the way they were reacting, it was like, this is unexpected. Like, okay, I do think that they undervalue her, but they clearly see her as competent enough to work there. She's the only woman. And so this was very much like, to me, it was, how could you be so dumb? Like, how?
Yeah.
Not, oh, we saw this coming all along.
Like, oh, it was only a matter of time before you did something like this. Yeah. Okay. So kind of that being said, was there any other way? Not that we're, I have no ideas, but do we think there was another way where Jarvis could have gotten out of the situation without Peggy doing something like that? Or was it like inevitability? Excuse me.
I can't really think of anything, because I was trying to come up with ways that she could have been like smarter about this, but with the time crunch and like the very small window of them coming out of the room and everything, she really just had to like go with the first thing that was going to work. But I don't know. I mean, unless it, I think at that point, like, it's kind of on Jarvis not to lose his cool and to believe that, one, Peggy's going to be looking out for him behind the scenes, like on the other side of that window, the mirror, or like just feel very confident that, no, I filed that police report. Like, I know it's there. You're going to have to admit that it's there eventually. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if he was, especially when they're bringing up his wife and stuff, I don't know if he would have been able to keep his cool like that.
Well, let's talk about his wife, because we get that scene with Peggy and Jarvis in the storm tunnel, basically, where she can't let it go. Like, she was more than happy to, I mean, not more than happy to, but she was willing to help Jarvis and get him out of that horrible situation. But she's not willing to stay quiet and kind of overlook the things that they were bringing up in the interrogation. And we find out that Jarvis was accused of treason because Anna, who later became his wife, or Anna, she was Jewish and he was trying to get her out of, I think he said he was in Budapest. He was trying to get her out of basically the area, and his superior wouldn't allow it. And so he forged the guy's signature. And I know, Karen, this scene, you said it hit you pretty hard and you were mad that none of us had it down in our favorite scenes or lines. Do you want to talk about this?
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's just like the romantic in me, but I really loved this because we're meant to question Jarvis a lot in these last couple of episodes and wonder what his ulterior motive is. And as soon as you find out that he's committed treason, you're like, oh crap. Like, maybe we shouldn't, you know, maybe the facade of like the adorable British butler is hiding something a lot more sinister. And then you find out why he committed treason and the fact that it was immediately dropped upon further investigation. And I just love his love of his wife. He respects her immensely, and he truly cares for her deeply. And I think seeing the lengths, I mean, he was willing to commit treason to save her life, and not everybody would do that. And I don't know. It just always hits me really hard. I just really love this story of how they met and how he got her out of there, and that they got married and continued on to have a lovely life together.
The only reason I didn't take it as my favorite scene is because I figured I would get to talk about it with my favorite line. So I left it for someone else so that I could talk about other things. That was the only reason I didn't take it.
Because I agree. Kristen says guiltily.
I know. Because I agree with you. I, honest to God, like, his devotion to his wife is one of my favorite things about Jarvis. Like, that he might be sneaking around and not be able to tell her, you know, the whole truth all the time, but like, he adores her and would, you know, he does everything in his power to keep her outside of all of what goes on with him and Howard and, you know, all the craziness that I'm sure he deals with. So it's just really lovely to find out that, like, what lengths he is willing to go to save her and to keep her, you know, happy and safe and in his life and all of that. Like, it is a really beautiful little scene between him and Peggy. And I love we didn't, none of us picked it for our favorite lines, but I really love the line he gives when he says, like, I can't always be truthful with her, but I'm always honest. Mm-hmm. Because it's very Jarvis. Like, it's very Jarvis.
Yeah. I also, I don't know why this in particular, but when Peggy says, because she was Jewish, and he goes, still is, actually, I'm happy to report, like, that, it's just that fondness in his voice just kills me. I just love it so much.
Mm-hmm. That was lovely. I'm trying to think. So, question for Ariana, is Anna someone that you would want to meet, or is it, are you okay with her kind of being this background motivator?
No, I want to meet her.
Okay.
Yeah, I feel like I hope we get to see her. Yeah, I'm all for more women having speaking roles on this show.
Definitely. I'm with you on that one. Okay, so the reason why they were down in that storm tunnel basically was to figure out how the bad babies were stolen. Peggy figures out that because there was a thunderstorm, there was a lot of water going through there. So the person basically just floated up, stole the stuff, and then floated out towards the ocean. And they figure out where that weird symbol was coming from. Happened to be on the side of a boat called, I think, the Heartbreak or the Heartbreaker. And they find Stark's stolen inventions in that boat. So we are three episodes in to this series, and we've already recovered the thing. Like, we found the box. Like, we found the thing that everybody has been kind of looking for. For me, in rewatching it, I always forget how soon this happens, because it feels like, I don't know if I'm alone in this, but it feels like finding the stolen inventions is something that should have happened a little bit further down the line. Did anyone else have that impression that that's what was going to happen and be surprised by this?
I always forget that we discover them so quickly. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, our goal, Peggy's goal, is to clear Howard's name. And step one to that was to find these, you know, stolen items and show people, like, you know, they're not all in, they got into the wrong hands. Howard didn't put them in the wrong hands. And so I'm with you. I absolutely forget that, oh yeah, they do that. You know, that happens really soon. Okay. And then we go from there. It does seem like something that should take them longer, but it's not. And so it's kind of like, okay, well, where are we going next? Like, what's the next thing now that she can do to try and help Howard? Because this seemed like an obvious one and that it was going to take a while. And then here, all of a sudden, it's like, poof, we found him. Okay, let's move. You know, what's next?
I mean, what's next indeed? We get a little bit of an idea of what they can do. So it wasn't just like, we're looking for the thing, we found the thing, it's done. We kind of see a little bit more about things that he created. So like the one that Peggy pulls out, which was supposed to be, I think, like a personal massager, basically constricts muscles to the point where bones break. Which was very handy that they found that and then she was able to use it right away. I don't want to say anything more, but so like these are Stark stolen inventions, and obviously they are not good for people who stumble across them because they can do pretty terrible things. And I think this scene on the boat was probably my second favorite scene, with Peggy really wanting to take credit and make up for the mistake that she had made in the SSR office, I think earlier that day. She wants the credit. She wants to be respected by her coworkers, and she goes to make the call, and Jarvis stops her. And Jarvis stops her with a pretty great argument. And you see Peggy get flustered. which I don't think is something that we've genuinely seen this far. And you see how disappointed she is and how much hope she had for being respected by her colleagues by being able to call this in. And so that kind of broke my heart a little bit.
It's very reminiscent of the conversation they have when Jarvis is stitching her up. Because you can see how she doesn't want to work within the confines of the time. She knows how capable she is, and she feels as though she has to go. A lot of women and a lot of minorities too, like, you feel like you have to go above and beyond just to be seen at the same level as everybody else. And I think that frustration comes out in this scene and that other scene where she just wants to be respected. She just wants to prove herself. And it's frustrating because she is very confident in her abilities, but she also needs that validation, which I'm sure isn't easy to admit for her, especially. But I like that at the end of the day, like, she's gonna still do what's best for the mission, so to speak, even if that kind of kills her a little inside. And I think that makes her a better agent.
Yeah. And I mean, on the flip side, I'm kind of glad that she didn't take the credit for it, partially because, like, she would have gotten in huge trouble and it would have been really bad, but also because Jarvis's American accent and calling people pal
was amazing. I loved it so much.
Like, hey, Mac, and I am just a pal. Yeah.
And Susan's like, what is going on right now? Yeah.
Who is this person?
And then at the end, he says something like, well, that's quite lovely. And yeah. He says it in that accent, and you're like, oh, man.
Like, have a lovely day. But he's still trying to be American. Hangs up real quickly.
Yeah, it's so great.
Hangs up and then seems pretty proud of himself. Like, oh, well, that went well. That was good. Good job. Pat on the back, Jarvis. When both he and Haley Atwell do their American accents on this show, they are absolutely fabulous, and I enjoy them immensely. And I had forgotten about this one, actually. And it kind of lightens the mood a little bit, which is fun. So Jarvis puts in this anonymous tip to a phone line that really nobody should have. So I don't know if that was the best idea. I don't know if they were really thinking that through.
Yeah, this was an actual dumb move.
Yeah.
Did they have another option, though?
I think...
Call the police.
Can you call the police for, like, secret, like, world-destroying tech?
I think that... if she were to have called the police, like, everybody knew that Stark was a wanted fugitive. Like, that made the papers. And so calling the regular police and saying, like, hey, we found boxes of this stuff. I'm not sure if they said why Stark was wanted, but, like, we found boxes of these things just lying around. I think that the SSR would probably have a way of maybe phone tapping police precincts, or, like, have someone on the inside at police precincts that can kind of raise the flag and run it up the flagpole to the SSR. Yeah. And so I do think that that would be a way to go. Otherwise, how would the SSR operate? How would they find out about things if they didn't have a network like that, you know?
If she really wanted to get credit, this is what she should have done. She should have had him call the cops, and then she goes to them and she says, hey, I heard from my cop friend that they've got this. And then it is like she found it.
Yeah.
That would have been better.
Yeah, that would have been much better. And she would have gotten the credit for sure. So yeah, I do think that that was an actual bad move. But I don't know if doing that any different would have saved or spared Ray Krasinski, or the guy who was kind of guarding the stuff on the boat. Because as they're driving away, someone is following them. So someone was watching them on the dock. Someone knew that they were going to be there. And I think someone was actually watching the person who was watching the bad babies. Is anyone sad? It's not a great scene. And like to see anyone who's supposed to be a good guy die is not a good thing. But were you sad about Ray Krasinski's death here, Ariana?
I don't care enough about him to be sad. Not like in a, I'm not saying that like flippantly. But I mean, I'm disappointed that he's off the show and that I did think he was, I thought the actor was like funny.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that he had room for growth. So that's disappointing. But I'm definitely not sad.
Sure.
There, yeah, I don't care about him. So
I think of out of like the three or four main guys, like he was clearly the cannon fodder.
And like the most expendable.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know, he was kind of a dick. Like he was the grossest out of everybody. And
he was, but we were getting more of that information in this episode. Like we were getting more information about his life, like the fact that he had a wife and had a girlfriend.
And a girlfriend.
And what?
And a girlfriend.
And a girlfriend.
I mean, it's weird because like I didn't like him. I didn't find him particularly funny. It was nice to see him be the target of their jokes because like he was clearly the grossest character and like they kind of did that at his expense, which was nice rather than it being at like Peggy's, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like he was an agent. He was a decent human being. He was trying to do some good in the world. And even though it didn't make me sad, I do find it unfortunate that he died. Like that sucks. Sorry, bro.
He was in some ways a nice foil to the way, like the way that the other guys see him is clearly, I don't know how to put this. Like, I don't want to say they look down to him, but they definitely, I feel like, don't necessarily share his views. And mm-hmm. that's kind of nice to see, like that they're like above it.
In yeah, some like ways. There are shades of their
misogyny.
Yeah.
Yay.
Shades of misogyny. Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
And the way in which he dies isn't great either. Like he did not stand a chance when basically he finds that this person is following them. They pull up to, I think it was a railroad crossing or a stop sign or a stoplight. I can't remember. And basically just gets shot by this shadowy figure, this shadowy person.
I just remember the first time watching this being kind of like shocked.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're in episode 3 and we just saw an agent who's been, you know, kind of set up as one of the major characters die. Like he's not Peggy and he's not Jack and he's not, you know, Howard, but he's been set up as like, you know, kind of one of the foils for Peggy at work. Like he is the guy who's kind of the grossest one and whatever. So it you feel like he's being set up to be around for a long time and then poof, out of nowhere, he dies and he's gone. And I remember the first time just being like, jeez, like, okay, I didn't think this was that kind of show, but apparently it is. All right, you know, it just kind of informs you that, like, not anybody's safe. I mean, people might be safe, but not everybody. And it does kind of shock. It shocked me for sure.
Mm-hmm. Or like
Chad Michael Murray's safe at least until the end of the season
because he's Chad Michael Murray.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Hashtag no comment on that one. So after Krasinski's death, we do get a sort of couple of final scenes that show the aftermath. We get basically the whole office. When Peggy walks in the next morning, she's kind of feeling good about herself, knowing that she did something good, even if no one else did, and immediately sees that something is wrong. And I really liked that shift in the way she was carrying herself. Like, you could tell immediately when she kind of switched over. But everyone in the office is mourning.
And I think this got me more than his death, because mm-hmm. like, these people knew him, and even if they made fun of him or they didn't always like him, they respected him as an agent, and he fell on the job doing his job. Mm-hmm. And that means something. And now they all want revenge, isn't really what I'm trying to say, but like, they want to avenge him. They want to make sure that his life, like, his death doesn't go.
His death wasn't for nothing.
Exactly. And I think like, that was way more powerful to me.
Yeah. And I mean, we see that a lot, even today, with fallen police officers. If someone is marked as a cop killer, the police officers will avenge their own and they will get justice. Like, it was one of their family. They may not all like each other, like, especially here in the SSR, they may not all like each other. They may not all get along, but they were a family in some way. And this family member died.
I will say, the donut crumbs on his desk.
Yes.
Every time.
Yes.
Like, the flowers and the fact that his desk is a mess, and you can see that it's like remnants of a life, you know, that is no longer. But the crumbs on his desk every time, I'm just like, it's, I don't know why, but it just gets me.
Because it makes it feel so fresh. Like, it just like he was just alive. Like 30 seconds ago, eating at his desk, being his gross self. And then you're just like, he's never going to do that again.
Or clean that shit up.
Yeah.
Probably. I mean, not that he probably did it previously.
Yeah.
And then the final scene of this episode, which we kind of touched on before, but the final scene is Peggy going to the automat and just trying to find solace in Angie. And I think this kind of relates to what you guys were saying before, in that Peggy admits she was not close to Krasinski. Like, they only sort of worked together. She doesn't know why she's upset, but she's upset. Which I also think is super powerful. Like, this person did not treat her well and treated her like a piece of meat, or like was going to allow Peggy to take his shift. But that doesn't mean that even though she wasn't treated well by him, that she still didn't respect him in some manner.
He's still a human being, you know. He still had a life and a family, and somebody ended that. And he wasn't the best person, clearly, but it also didn't make him evil. And I think her reaction to him dying is very true to life. Because sometimes it's like, when you know, like, even when you're not close to somebody, they're not necessarily problematic, and they die, that can kind of hit you in a weird way, because all of a sudden you're like reminded of how fragile life is. And especially in her line of work, I'm sure she's kind of scared, mm-hmm. which is totally fair.
Well, and I'm curious, do we think that her reaction to his death has any... to what degree of guilt do we think she feels over his death? Like, do we think that's something that she's sort of carrying because they found the thing and sort of called it in, or that doesn't factor in here?
I was just kind of batting that around in my head. Like, I don't necessarily think she feels super guilty about it, because in the end, she was doing like the right thing. They found these, you know, these inventions. It needed to be reported. It wasn't like she had gone, you know, and drawn them all out to like distract them or something. I think if he had died on like a wild goose chase that she had sent them on because she was trying to cover for Howard, I feel like I would be holding Peggy more accountable for his death, because in that mm-hmm. case, he shouldn't have been there, but he was living out the duties of his job. Mm-hmm. There was a reason why they were there. It was a righteous reason. She may have used underhanded means to get them there, but it wasn't like he shouldn't have been there. he, you know, had the bad guy or had a witness at the time, the, who they assumed was involved, and was taking him back to headquarters to interrogate him. Like, he was doing his job. So I don't feel like she should feel guilty about it. Whether she does or not, I think is something we'll probably get a taste of in the next episode or whatever. Cause here she's still, it's still fresh. She's still just figuring out how she feels about it. And I feel like if she's going to feel guilty, we'll kind of see that in the next couple of episodes.
Did anyone else think he was going to get hit by the train?
I did not.
You guys don't remember.
I did not, but that's interesting.
Really? Like, they stop on the train tracks. The train is coming. He's distracted by the guy. I thought for sure.
Well, and, like the guy hits his rear end and doesn't, like, nudge him onto the tracks or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I kind of, yeah, I know
thought that, that I thought that they were going to push him into the train.
Interesting. Ooh, that would have been messy.
I feel weirdly grateful for Krasinski's death. I know that's strange to say, but he basically just found out that Peggy was involved.
Yeah.
And then both he and the witness died. So, like, we're supposed to be worried for her for a second, and then all of a sudden, okay, nobody's going to find out what she did. And you kind of were like, well, thank goodness nobody's going to find out, but also, like, sucks that he had to die, which I think is an interesting and conflicting feeling to have us experience.
Well, I think the reason also why I brought up the idea of guilt, and it kind of goes along with this conflicting feeling, is that even though, Kristen, everything that you said is, like, completely valid and I'm with you, the only thing that holds me back in terms of guilt is that Peggy did not disclose any sort of information about who they were actually dealing with. So they were kind of going in blindly thinking they were just dealing with Howard Stark, and not that we know anything at this point about Leviathan, but we do know that, like, there are people who are scared of them and that, like, they are dangerous. And so I think that is kind of where that complexity in terms of the guilt comes in for me, which then makes the fact that, like, this thing that Krasinski didn't know about is what killed him, but also saves Peggy, it makes it even more complex for me to kind of bring that back around.
It makes a lot of sense. It, you know, maybe she still will feel a little guilt over this, who knows, but it's definitely complex, that's for sure.
I mean, it also could just be me. I'm a Midwesterner and I have a really bad guilt complex, so I see guilt everywhere.
It's true.
Yeah, basically. You know, that's how it goes. All right. Any other remaining thoughts about this episode? Like I said at the top, I feel like a lot sort of happens, but not a lot happens at the same time.
I feel like we find out a lot of information, but the actual, like, movements of everybody are fairly contained.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Well, then let's get into our favorite scenes and favorite lines for this episode. My favorite scene, as I had mentioned before, it's not something I particularly enjoy, but it's when Peggy's getting reamed out by Chief Dooley in his office. Just the way that Hayley Atwell plays that scene and the way that Peggy is reacting, you can see you're kind of struggling with, I did the right thing, but also, like, that was really stupid and I feel terrible. I just really like how that scene kind of goes down. Karen, what was your favorite scene?
Mine was Mr. Jarvis talking about how he met Mrs. Jarvis, because it was beautiful and makes my heart flutter.
And you're here for love.
I am here for love.
Ariana, your favorite scene?
I was at the beginning when all the girls were chatting around the table. I don't think this is going to happen, but at the time, I was hopeful that we were going to get that world fleshed out a little bit more, and I'd love to see some, like, character actresses pop in, like, every now and then to do some funny things, because we could. The one thing I'm really disappointed about in Krasinski is that he wasn't, I mean, he wasn't funny, but, like, the show in general is not funny. And he was, like, a little bit of, like, comedic humor. And so, what's it called? Like,
comic relief.
Yes, thank you. Comedic relief, which I think that the show could use a little bit more of sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that we get it in some other ways, which I think we will, because I saw the thumbnail for next week.
I think I know what that thumbnail might be. Okay. Kristen, your favorite scene?
I really liked Peggy and Angie in the final scene where Peggy like goes to the automat and like sits down and basically says, I do want to talk about my day. Like, I had a bad day today. You know, let's chat. Because, you know, we all kind of saw why Peggy was keeping her at arm's length because of what she just went through with her other roommate. And, you know, like, it makes logical sense. But she really does need someone to talk to and someone who isn't the guys at work. And so seeing her, you know, kind of be a little bit vulnerable and say, like, yeah, like, I want to talk to you. I want to be friends. And she's actually going to make an effort is really nice. And I like her and Angie. So I really like that scene.
That's a good one. Definitely. And speaking of Angie, I want to move into favorite lines and talk about my favorite line, which was from Angie. And it's when she first bursts into Peg's room earlier in the episode and wants to talk about her day. She goes, I got a bottle of schnapps and a half a rhubarb pie. Let's see which one makes us sick first.
That sounds like a good time to me.
Yeah, it sounds like something we would actually do.
Yeah.
You know, it's fine. Karen, what was your favorite line?
It was when they go to pick up Jarvis to take him downtown and Jarvis goes, well, this will be novel. I haven't been in the back of a car in years. And I just love he's totally chill because he, like, yeah, he did something wrong, kind of, but he feels very confident that, like, all his bases are covered. And for somebody who could come off as a bit of a worrywart, especially in comparison to Peggy, who's, like, always calm and collected, he's got, you know, I feel like he's good under pressure, which is nice to see.
It's an interesting complexity for sure. Ariana, your favorite line.
So some context for this. After the captain like gives his speech about Krasinski dying and he's like, I have to go call his wife now. Like I was genuinely like a little bit moved because it's always really, it always hits me in shows when somebody dies and then they're like, okay, now we have to tell the family because I imagine the family. And that to me is like the worst thing. Like, oh, just having to, like, I don't know how doctors do it, but, so I was like, oh, that's so awful. And then immediately it cuts to Chad Michael Murray and he's like, I'll call his girlfriend. And I laughed out loud because it was such a like turn, but it was, it's, I love the line cause it's both like funny and reminding you like, oh yeah, this guy was kind of like unseemly. but also like kind of sweet in terms of that, you know, he wasn't like sleeping around. He had his study girlfriend and his wife.
And his coworker knew him well.
Yes.
And being nice and wanted to tell the girlfriend. It wasn't like he was saying it snarkily. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He says it so genuinely. Good for Chad Michael Murray. He's a good guy.
Good for Chad Michael Murray. Yes. And Kristen, you want to take us out with your favorite line?
Mine is during Jarvis's interrogation when they first bring up Anna start talking about his treason and all of that. And they bring up his wife and he just is shaking with fury and says, you leave my wife out of this. It's basically the start of us learning about Jarvis's devotion to his wife. And, you know, we go on to learn quite a bit more in this episode about, you know, how much he loves her and just that fervor, like the intensity of his emotion, the minute they start talking about his wife, it gets me every time. I love Jarvis. So I'm really, it just, ugh, it gets me. I love it.
His whole demeanor changes, you know? Yeah. And like up until this point, he's been a pretty happy-go-lucky kind of guy. And then you realize that he has this passion and yeah, this anger inside of him. And it's like, oh, all of a sudden I see you in a different light. This is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, Jarvis. I was just going to say the same thing. All right. Well, those were our favorite scenes, our favorite lines, and our thoughts about this episode. And we all know that you have thoughts too. If you're anything like me, you were probably maybe yelling back at your headphones or your phone while you're listening to this, like with some thought that you had that we did not cover, we want to hear what you are yelling. We want to hear what made you happy, what made you sad. So please come get in contact with us. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter. We're at re_watchable, or you can also come find us on Tumblr. We're at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. So please come reach out. Let us know what you think. We are always happy to hear. And also, we want to know what you think about our podcast in general. Hopefully, it's all good things. But hey, we'll take any sort of criticism. That's completely fine. But please come leave us a review on iTunes if you haven't already. They help other people find us. And then we can kind of have a big, happy, rewatchable family. And it'll be all good. So if you rate us 5 stars on iTunes, your incentive for this week is that Karen will shimmy up a drain pipe and sneak into your room to love you, which I don't know if you can get anything better than that, honestly.
I like the visual of me shimmying up a drain pipe. I'm not sure what to love you means.
It just was, it was to make it clear that you weren't there to kill them.
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
Yeah. This was the non-violent alternative. I mean,
This is Agent Carter. It could go either way.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say like that you wouldn't withhold a stolen car report and beat them to death. I don't know. So this is the much nicer option.
I mean, both are great incentives at completely different ends of the spectrum, but yeah. I feel like they're both very motivating.
Yeah. And could both be very you. So,
so I'm a lover and a fighter.
Yeah. All right. Well, before we wrap up, we do want to get to some feedback that we've had. And I think, Ariana, this first one might be up your alley if you'd like to take it.
This is from the Queer Place. This is the Queer Place at Nurse Brat. And they said, Jack is totally going to end up in Hydra someday, not even realize he's a bad guy. Which one is Jack again?
Chad Michael Murray.
Chad Michael.
Oh, no, he's not. Chad Michael Murray is clearly the hero. I already told you that John Philip Sousa's in Hydra. And Chad Michael Murray is clearly going to be the endgame love interest.
I'm on your side, Nurse Brack. I feel like this was a very good observation.
Oh my gosh. I just like that you keep calling Sousa John Philip Sousa. Because then you're making like another star-spangled man with a plan. Oh gosh. Okay. Karen, do you want to get this next one from Eric?
Yes. Eric Johnson at Eric J Designs says, shout out to Karen Rott, Danielle, Mitch, and the whole Rewatchable crew for streaming such a fun show last night. Congratulations on the 300 episode milestone. So many podcasts could only dream of a 6-year run like this. Cheers to continued success. Hashtag Rewatchable 300. Thank you.
Thank you.
306 years. I'm still kind of not over it. It keeps hitting me every once in a while. It's a long time, you guys.
It is.
We birthed a first grader.
Oh my God. Time.
Why would you say that?
Here we go.
Now I feel really old. I'm just going to, do you have any kids? Yeah. Their name's Rewatchable. They're great now.
We've been through everything. Death, murder.
Oh God. Yeah.
Vampires.
Orgies.
Orgies. Oh yes. Oh man. Poor 6-year-old. Kristen, would you like to get this last tweet?
Sure. Yes. This last one is from Kafir Shaltiel at K Shaltiel. And it says, okay, Rewatchable. I just finished watching the stream. I had so much fun. And I have to tell you that your Atla watch is one of my favorites. And I re-listen to it about once a year. Heart emojis. And I can't wait for the Facebook group. I'm definitely going to join. Thanks.
Woo.
I mean, I wasn't on Atla, so I have no...
I feel like Atla's our legacy, though.
Yes, I really feel like we get the most... Like, I feel like they are our most hardcore fan listeners.
Yeah.
And I feel like I in terms of Twitter, we get the most callbacks to Atla.
Yeah. It makes me sad that Atla and Veronica Mars are the two that everyone talks about, and they're, like, the two that I wasn't on for. Yeah. So it's like, It's okay, guys. You don't have to love me. I'll just force myself down your throats. Hi, you guys. I'm still here.
I'll just be over here. Yeah, no, I feel that way about Atla, too. Like, I'm really happy that we still have fans of that, but also really sad because I have no idea what even went on there.
Guess you know what your next podcast is going to be.
I guess so. Wait, that I'm going to listen to or record? Am I going to record my own rewatchable for Atla?
I was going to say listen to, but you could totally record your own.
It's just me and Danielle.
It's very amusing, Danielle. It will definitely pass your time. We're hilarious.
Oh, I don't doubt it. I always love listening to episodes of Rewatchable that I'm not on. So I don't doubt it at all.
And Kristen, I have the box set of Avatar, so anytime.
It's good to know. It's good to know.
All right. So before we go, our last segment here is kind of wrong because I mistakenly thought Kristen was a newbie, so I'm sorry. So we're just going to hear Ariana's assumptions, and it's going to be about Agent Carter Season 1, Episode 4, The Blitzkrieg Button. Ariana, do you have any ideas or assumptions?
Well, I know Howard Stark is coming back because Hulu told me, and his face popped up as soon as this episode was over. So he's going to be back, and I hope he stays because he is really funny. And I think just brings like a different energy, especially in the like Peggy Jarvis relationship. I like to see them as a trio, but I don't know what Blitzkrieg means. And a button, it's too early. I'm sorry. I can't be clever. I don't have anything for you. There's going to be a button.
So a blitzkrieg is an intense military campaign intended to bring about a swift victory.
Oh, so I think Howard Stark is probably going to come back. He's going to be like, listen, it's gotten out of hand and you guys are just making things worse. So I've got to do some, I'm going to make my money talk or something. I don't know.
Every time I hear the word blitzkrieg, I obviously think of like the Blitzkrieg Bop.
Yep.
Which, thanks to the last Spider-Man movie, it like regularly plays in my head. Just like, I can bring it up and be like, oh yeah, okay, I know what that song is.
I know what this is?
The song?
Yeah.
Let's create Bop. Hey,
oh, let's go.
Oh. Hi. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I know what that is.
That song. Chris and I am on a level with you. I think of the same thing.
It's just such a specific word. And it's not used all that often, so.
It is not. So I guess we're just, yes, it sticks in your brain. And I guess we're just going to have to wait and see what it means for Agent Carter moving forward. So that's all that we have to say about Time and Tide. But we will be back next week to talk about the Blitzkrieg Button. So hopefully you will join us then. But until that time, I'm Danielle.
I'm Karen.
I'm Mariana.
And I'm Kristen.
And we'll see you later. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.